listen and to learn. And as the new kid on the block, I can see that I do have very much to learn. One of those things I have to learn, like Chief Isaac, not to speak from prepared notes. And secondly, I have to learn how to dress a little bit nicer. I'm glad to be here to join you at the AFN convention, marking the 10th anniversary of the passage of the Alaska Claims Settlement Act. And I congratulate you for that. But really, I'm here to talk about Anchorage and the important role that you play and will play in this city. And as the next mayor of Anchorage, I'm pleased that you have chosen to begin the second decade of ANCSA in this town, just as you first started it in December of 1971 on the APU campus. And in those days, Alaska did seem a lot smaller. The clock ran slower for all of us then, and the issues that marked our lives, the city was one-third smaller. And for you and your friends, among whom I stand, the passage of the Claims Act and the related development at Trudeau Bay was the beginning of new times for the state, and especially for this, its largest city. Your settlement was a promise vindicated, and although the realization of your land settlement remains in some cases still a promise, its most tangible impact in Anchorage comes from the capital endowment and the investments you've made in and the confidence that you have shown in this town. And I'd like to take just a second and look at some of your contributions. And I'm going to do something that I've never heard done before at an AFN convention or a Chamber of Commerce meeting or a political rally in Anchorage. And I'd like to do a little roll call of what the Alaska Native Claims means in Anchorage. The Sheraton Anchorage Hotel, the Anchorage Westward Hilton, the Inlet Inns, the International Inn, the Cook Inlet Building, the Sunshine Plaza Mall, the Chugach Building, the CINA Building, the Tionic Building, the Tionic Properties, the New Kuskokwim Village Building, and a lot of other real estate around town. They're the statewide headquarters for Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, the Bristol Bay Native Corporation, Chalista Corporation, the Aleuts, the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association, Chugach Natives, Inc., Cook Inlet Regional Corporation, Bering Straits Native Corporation, Island Development Corporation, the Alaska Native Foundation, the North Pacific Rim, and of course, the Alaska Federation of Natives. Now, there are jobs and investments in all such Native-owned businesses and organizations, as well as with the Central Alaska Utilities, the United Bank of Alaska, all the hotels that I've mentioned, the Tundra Times, Alaska Brick Company, Nana Development Corporation, ANAC, CBDC, and Native Ventures with construction companies such as M&K, Frucom, Rogers and Babbler, BECO, Alaska General, cold storage plants, and fishery support, and the list goes on. And finally, with this not too complete list, I guess I should now add Western Airlines, the only way to fly. And I've made this roll call to point out that I certainly understand your impact on this city. You mean jobs, investments, tax revenues, and civic energy. And because you have such an impact, you must make your voice heard. Make no mistake about it, if a single business had this billion-dollar level of investment and commitment to Anchorage, it would be speaking constantly. And speaking not just about business and bottom line, but about the social concerns of its owners and shareholders. And that's important here because I believe with many of you that the Claims Settlement Act did not merely limit your efforts to the narrowest definition of business and profits, but ANCSA anticipated Native businesses using your important economic power, of which I have listed, and the land base and the land power base to speak to other issues, your people and their needs. For just as you have impacted the economy of the city, You are the people of the city. Your shareholders drive to work. They're concerned about law and order and its application. They're worried about their children and their schools. They want fire protection, cultural and recreational opportunities, theaters, libraries, town squares, and parks. And as you now call Anchorage your home, you've made it the largest single center where Native people live in all of the state. However, our bigger city and your smaller towns must work together. We all sit as Municipal League members. We confront common problems of health and social services, and by and large, when your shareholders leave the villages, they come here, and we need housing when they do. Anchorage cannot exist either as an island of prosperity or failure. Our future as a city is inexorably tied to the future of the rest of the state. Economic hardship in your villages transfers problems to Anchorage without a solution found along the way. Every geographic point has its own particular strength, and we all have to work and learn to ensure that all of our strengths are appropriately recognized. Now, I was elected to office because I asked Anchorage to listen to elect a person who listened to them, who wanted to be their neighbor, and who would be mayor for all of Anchorage. But I cannot be mayor of all of Anchorage if a major part of our community is silent about its concerns. People's worries or hopes, their anxieties or their aspirations are the stuff of government. And we can't plan for the future without knowing them. And I'm ready to listen to you, and after listening, to act. So while I'm here today to congratulate you on another successful and particularly historic meeting, I'm here to urge you to speak up and speak out about your lives and your role in Anchorage. Anchorage has not often been regarded as a friend or partner with rural Alaska. The message that I bring to you today is that myself and my administration stand ready, willing, and eager to change that. I want it to be said on my anniversary that I carried on a dialogue. And I'm here today, 3 weeks before I take the oath of office, to invite you to join that dialogue in the succeeding years of your anniversary. Thank you very much.
Panel. On the historical perspective of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, the head of the panel is going to be Imo Nadi. I don't believe that you really need an introduction because many of us know Mr. Nadi. He was involved in the development of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. He was also past president of the U.S. Of AFN. Mr. Nadi was also the president of Doyon Limited and is quite active in the Native community in such a manner that it's going to be beneficial for us. I can't say so many more good things about Emo, because if I do, we may never hear his panel. Emo?
Agnes Brown and Al Ketzler. I'll just wait a few minutes while they come forward. Ladies and gentlemen, friends, distinguished Alaskans and all of you. Almost 10 years after passage of the most successful native land claim and money settlement in America's history, this panel will bring to you a recap of some of the forces that made settlement a reality, and in that process, united for the first time, Alaska's native people. We will share with you some of the events that happened along the way. But most importantly, we want to remember some of the people who made personal sacrifices for this cause. Some of those people are no longer with us. Alaska's history is unique in the way that the United States government dealt with Native people. We were never defeated in war. We were never put on reservations. And for the most part, our contacts with the Western civilization has been harmonious. The history of our struggle to get recognition for land and ownership is a long one that is not well known. AFN is only a recent organization that was built on the experience of earlier efforts and people who have gone before us. Today, to lead off our panel and to tell us something of the early efforts of the Ten of Chiefs is Alfred Ketzler. Al Ketzler is from Niana, and I knew of Al Ketzler long before I met him because he was prominent statewide every spring about April, March, before the ice went out because he headed the Niana High School. But also because he was involved with some of the early efforts where there was conflict and land use along the highways for the interior people. And so, Al, my pleasure to introduce you to talk about the early history of Ten of Chiefs.
Pleasure to be here. It's kind of a long time ago. I had to sit down and think quite a while to try to remember some of the high points of my life when I first started being involved. I was born in Montana. I lived there most of my life, but since about the last 10 years being involved in land claims, you know, I've spent most of my time laying in surveys. I first became involved in the land plan movement in early 1962. Along about that time, the state of Alaska, or Alaska had become a state, and they had selection rights to 103.5 million acres. And so villages like Niana were feeling the pressure of state selections with the loss of the land that the natives had traditionally used for time immemorial. So the Native Council at Niana in January of 1962 decided that during the dog races that would be held in Niana in February of 1962, that we would invite a number of interior villages to have a meeting with them and to see if they had the same kinds of problems. So in February, we did send out the invitations, and in February, there's 10 villages showed up. At that time, I was not the chief of the village, a gentleman named Alphonse Randolph, who has since passed away, as was the chief at the time. And yet invited the villages. They came to me now during this time. We met discussing problems, employment, land, state land selections around villages, the hunting and fishing problems that we were having. We found that all the village problems were basically all the same. So that meeting, which I attended, I was not a delegate, and I say I wasn't a chief at the time, but we talked about years ago, you know, in 1915, when all the chiefs in the interior were together in town, Alaska, for what they called a mutual way. And so we decided that we would try to organize a meeting for all the interior at Panama the following summer. And so, since I was rather vocal in the discussion, you know, working with Native groups, you know what happened. If you talk too much, you get selected to do something. So I was delegated to organize the meeting, send out all the invitations, just do everything that you can to get the meeting organized. We wrote to the village of Panama, who responded very well. They said in the spirit of the thing, and they also planned on organizing the games there, which still go on today, which is the first fall in the show. During the time when Panama Chiefs meeting would be there. In June of 1962, of course, we had sent out the letters of invitation explaining what the reasons for the meeting and requesting that everybody send a delegate. During this time, I met Laverne Madigan, who was the executive director of the Association of American Indian Affairs, and who had been to Point Barrow at the first Inupiat Paiute meeting and came to me now to talk with me and some of the local people there about the meeting and what the plan should be in trying to assert our rights to the ownership of the land. They agreed to help us finance the meeting and give a small amount of money. Of course, back then you could charter a DC-3 to go to Panama back for less than $500. So what we did is we had all of the delegates to try to gather in Fairbanks and boom to Panama. We held the meeting, which was basically an organizational meeting. It was, I imagine, a little 30-some people there from different villages. We had a very good turnout. Of course, Panama didn't have a restaurant, so we had to kind of organize a local soup kitchen type of operation where we had people cooking water. So we would go there and the effort. During that meeting, we discussed, of course, the hunting and fishing rights, climate and villages, the whole range of subjects that are still discussed today. And we found, of course, again, we find that problems are the same. Discussing these issues, we organized Panama Chiefs and they selected a name for Panama Chiefs. Of course, the popular English version of the real name we selected was Kanan Nakanash, which meant that in our land speaks. It had no different meanings in different dialects, but that was the basic meaning. And so we chose that as our name. At that meeting, I was elected as chairman for the coming year to keep the organization going, try to work with other organizations, try to have people select their land, do the things by selecting land. What we've done was we sent maps to all the villages to get. We asked them to have village meetings, draw on maps, all of the areas that they used, and have everybody there draw in trap lines, or fishing camps, or hunting areas, and have them sent back to us so we could then file and send them to the Department of Interior, who's claiming that land for the villages that they get additionally used. Also during that time, Nupia, I had another meeting in Kotzebue. I attended that in late 1962. And met a number of the other people involved in the movement that had originated in Barrow. Of course, some of you may remember the duck incident where one individual was arrested for shooting ducks in the spring, and the next day 138 more showed up with ducks in the hand waiting to be arrested. Of course, nothing happened that until the charges were dropped. Also on that year, the state had made a proposal to enter into the Minto to create a recreation area, build roads in, and have the area available to about outside people to come in, you know, have easy access rather than have to go by boat, you know, or bird banks or by airplane to fly in, but have it opened up where they could go in and use it as a recreation area. This was those meetings were held very successfully blocked the proposal. Along during that same year, Stephen Village filed a protest, protesting for state land selections in their area. As over time went on, the state further worked in the process of selecting. Of course, they had a large number of creatures to grow yet, so we did not slow down their efforts at all during our, even during our protest, the federal government. And some of the things we did, I attended a meeting, and first time I ever left the state of Alaska, which was 1963, and probably about then, I'm about 30 years old. And I went to straight to Washington, D.C. Boy, like me getting a big city like that. Very impressive. And one of my first meetings during the five was with a nationwide group was the Secretary of Interior and Stuart Udall. I attended the meeting at the invitation of the Global National Council on Indian Affairs, which was a group formed nationwide of about 20 national Indian interest groups. And they created a council that met in Washington, met with certain officials. And we met with them and we talked about Alaska and the problems that we had. And our desire was to have the state selection stopped until the native claims could be settled. Also during this time, after that, this was in April, after that in June, we had our next NLG's meeting. And we again went through, we had a little more recognition, we had some of were in the middle of a very heavy discussion. Rampart Dam had become a big issue at the time. We were talking about building dam. Secretary of Interior also at the time then appointed what they called the Alaska Task Force. There was two officials from the Department of Interior and the Secretary of State, Hugh Wade at the time. They were at the meeting and talked about Senator King, he wanted, of course, flew me in on the platter that I had, and wanted to talk to the group delegates, refused to talk to him, but we had other issues that we were trying to resolve in the meeting, but we had to close the meetings. I remember it was raining very heavily, but it was quite a thing that we were in the group and trying to let somebody in to talk to him. One of the things I really remember at that meeting when the Alaska Task Force was there, they were talking about the Rampart Dam, which was endured the flood, the full winter flats all the way to about Fort Yukon, and it was very unique. Of course, one of the big issues in the, that were being discussed was education. Schools that we had were inadequate. Too small, and we needed new ones. And the person from Fort Yukon was talking. Secretary of State, DOA, was about he would look into it and he'd see if we could have a new school built in Fort Yukon. Al Grant, and I'll fight that. So, I really want to thank the Secretary of State. He wants to educate the Indian before he drowns them. So, some of the things that the Alaska Task Force came up with, some of their recommendations, to see how far different they are than the what actually happened with the land claims, was that one that they recommended the prompt granting of 160 acres to individuals or their homes or fishing and hunting sites. And that they would withdraw small acreages around villages for future growth. And they would designate carriers for native use here on those areas, but that have produced but not for ownership. This is for the traditional guests. They brought that recommendation back to the Secretary of Interior and all the groups, of course, opposed it, and of course, they were never implemented. In 1964, I was elected again president of the time. I was president six times, so I get my dates mixed up. From the time about 1964 through 68, well, during the time I was chairman, I was also an employee of the Federal Aviation Administration, and back then it was called the FAA, or Federal Administration Agency, and being involved in Native movement, planning land, I was starting to get a lot of flack on the job, so in 1965, I've been doing what I was doing with the Native movement. Working for government. I went for the summers, looks like a little seasonal jobs and so on. And, but I kind of backed off of working with the At that time, we had no contracts. During 1969, I was after I was elected, I remember a meeting with my board and talking about we could find a plan out somewhere where I could get paid for my work so I can devote this whole time to it. And the board agreeing, and they agreed to $7,500 annual salary. If I could find the money to pay myself, that's what I was talking about.